Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell.
Back to throw, first and 10. The pass is tight end.
And Raja Bell.
Bell has got 22 to Raja.
Saw the future of football right before your eyes. Just yell it out, man. He can't guard me.
What is going on? Welcome to Off the Bench. Hope everybody had a great weekend. I'm here. I'm Danny Cannell with Raja Bell. The man, I was trying to get something in right before the show. A little last swig of water to make sure I'm hydrated because we got a big show this Monday. Panda Ostapchuk with us as always, as my man Debo is too. Hope everybody had a fantastic weekend. Now, I feel like Friday's show, we buried the lead a little bit because we didn't get to it. If you missed the episode, you need to go back and make sure you
listen
to the very, very end. Because
it's like the last minute.
Yes, it's like the last minute of the show. But we discussed just briefly how you had been kicked out of a high school basketball game.
Yes.
You help out, you're an assistant coach, high school basketball team, and you got kicked out of a game. Now, today we learned, like, I thought it was just, you know, oh, you just got, you know.
So did I.
So, but there was actually, there were consequences. You have official punishment to deal with now?
I do. I got an email from my buddy Ken Kelly, head coach at Western, and it says that the school will be fined $100, to which I was like, gladly, I'll pay the $100. I don't want anybody to be suffering financially on my account. Two-game suspension.
What the heck?
And I've got to complete an online mentoring and, and teaching class because I'm supposed to set an example.
That's unreal.
So I go in, right, and I felt bad. But I wasn't acting the fool. Like, I wasn't up yelling and screaming. I was just talking to the ref, and he didn't like what I said, so he kicked me out. So I go in, and I still apologize to our kids. I'm like, look, guys, I can't be with you guys the last two games of the season. I'll be back for the playoffs. I was like, it's my bad. I could have cost you the game, you know, whatever. And those dudes were like, are you kidding me? They were like, it was the best thing I've ever seen. Like, at least somebody cares about us. Like, thank you for – and so I got mixed emotions.
I got to go back. How bad were you yelling at the ref?
I wasn't yelling at all.
Really?
No. He made a call late in the game. We have two kids that look similar, but one's a lot taller than the other. Called it on the shorter one, and they were really, really bad. Like, the other team shot 37 free throws in a 32-minute game, of which we were winning the entire time. So we're not trying to foul. You understand? Like, so it was really bad. But he gave the foul to the wrong kid. He called it on one kid, assessed it at the book on another kid, and it was that kid's fifth foul, and he's our only big. And so I just asked him, I said, bud, look, you made it on the other kid.
Right.
That guy was nowhere near the play. You know, and he got all, like, you know, high school refs tend to get, like, you know, really obnoxious and whatever. I said, look, man, just revisit it. Ask your partners. It wasn't that kid. It was the other kid. And he told me to sit down and this and that. I said, you know what? They shouldn't even give you a check tonight.
Oh!
And he got offended, which was fine. So he teched me. And then his buddy came over, and he was like, hey, you know, you can't say that or whatever. I was like, look, man, I told him the situation. He said, yeah, but it's his right to. I said, well, I still maintain he shouldn't get his check tonight. And so he kicked me out.
It's great. I love it. But all in a normal, like, you weren't yelling.
No, I wasn't. No, sitting down. I wasn't even standing up. Yeah.
All right. Well, let us know how that course goes. That online course.
You anger
management. I don't know that I'll be taking the course.
Oh, you better. They're going to make sure you complete it.
Yeah, I know. I got to do something.
I think you should do it on the show.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to the meat of it. We got a big show for you. We got Will Brinson coming on, our CBS Sports senior NFL writer. He's going to go over some Super Bowl stuff with us. He'll be in Minnesota later this week, as will I. I'm headed out later this afternoon. We got to do our NBA Grammys. Debo's got something dialed up for us. They had the Grammys last night. I did not watch much of it. And I don't know. I felt like I watched the first hour, and I was kind of like, I knew.
You watch an hour of the Grammys?
Yeah, because I like to see the performances.
You watch Grammys?
No, I watched the red carpet.
All right.
That's my favorite
part.
So
I watched a little bit of it.
Okay.
I like to see it.
Yeah, but you're heavy in it. Like, I'm not as heavy into music, I feel, as you may be.
Really?
Yeah. I like music, but I wouldn't watch the Grammys, I don't think.
I like the Grammys, but yeah, no, I recorded it because I only want to watch the things that people are talking about. I don't care to actually
right.
sit there.
But I don't think there was much to talk about after. Like,
really?
I don't think there were that many memorable moments.
I heard Cardi
show.
B killed it.
She was all right.
Do you like Cardi? How do we feel about Cardi B?
I love Cardi B.
Seems all right.
What?
Like, my kids like it, but I don't know that I mean, she's all right.
She's like a boss. I think she's so cool.
I just didn't know Kendrick Lamar was that short or Rihanna's that tall.
Yeah, I heard
she was
Rihanna was like
a foot taller.
Probably I heard both. Her performance was rough. Did you see it?
Whose?
Rihanna's.
I did not see her performance.
Oh, okay.
I saw her on stage giving the acceptance speech. And
How'd she
look? Towering
what was
over.
She wearing?
She's beautiful. She's beautiful. She was rather conservative, but
she
had her hair done up huge. All right. They will do an extra podcast special on the Grammys after this one. We'll get a bonus segment. So we have to get to a serious topic because it's something that's really consumed the sports world the past month in the news that kind of everybody has known about this, but really it's been something that's going on for quite some time, and really unfortunately so. And that's the Michigan State scandal, which I'm sure everybody is aware of what's happened with the Larry Nassar case. That's the doctor who was sexually assaulting over 150 gymnasts that had come through his program and female athletes.
That's crazy.
And it was disgusting, and he got sentenced, and that was a great thing, and it's you know, the some of the heroes that came out were the women that were the victims that actually exposed him and spoke up about it, which was really cool to see them come together. But in all of this, so the Michigan, that's one aspect of it. And then more recently, this has spiraled a little bit into some other sports and those programs. So Mark D'Antonio and Tom Izzo, the head football coach and basketball coach at Michigan State, have been at their in their positions for quite some time. And all of a sudden, they're starting to take some heat as well, because ESPN from Outside the Lines did a report, and they came out on Friday, and it was basically a report saying there was a culture around Michigan State's football and basketball programs of sexual assault and a lack of transparency from the program. OTL reported that at least 16 Michigan State football players have been named in accusations of rape or violence against women since D'Antonio took over in 2007. He was involved in at least one of those cases, the discipline handing out from those. He's denied, Mark D'Antonio has denied, said there are no truth to the reports that saying he would resign. His quote on record is, "We've always had high values in this program, and that will never change." Tom Izzo has been asked a lot about it. Here was a sequence that he had with a reporter after the game that was asking him about one of his former coaches and his involvement with the program.
He was with your staff throughout 2010. An allegation came forward later that year that from a woman and her family to the athletic department that he and two of your players raped her. He then left the program later that year in 2010. Why?
To be honest with you, I don't remember why he left. I know he went to Europe to play, and as you know, I'll still say I'll cooperate with any investigation that's made. I did it then. I did it before, and I'm not going to answer any questions that aren't pertaining to either basketball or things that I am not going to talk about right now.
Let me ask you this question then. Looking back at the way sexual assault allegations have been handled by your basketball program, do you have any regrets?
I've cooperated with every investigation, every one.
All right, so that was head coach Tom Izzo for the basketball program talking about Travis Walton, former player, but he was assistant at the time. This to me is sort of, it's one of those things that you do not want to have happen if you're Michigan State, obviously. But when you have Outside the Lines come digging around your program, and especially after this scandal, it's, to me, I get concerned that it's a witch hunt, that they're starting to look for, oh my gosh, let's go find everything we can. And I don't know. I don't know what the proper response should be, but I feel like people are out there calling for Mark D'Antonio and Tom Izzo's job before the cases are even heard.
Oh God, this is
It's a deep subject.
First and foremost, let me just make sure everyone understands like that all of this is like reprehensible. Like it's disgusting. It's you know, the predatorial nature of Nassar is like, you know, that's as sick as you get. And I don't ever condone any man, female, or anyone taking advantage of or going against the wishes of another human being, right? You respect people, whatever size, shape, color, race, creed, gender, like we must. I don't know what Tom Izzo could say to those questions. And I was left feeling like he did a lot of dodging and deflecting. And then, you know, it makes you look semi-guilty, but there's no win there. Like, you can't answer, because anything that you say in that situation, they're going to twist it and make it, you know, make it into what they want it to be. So the best way to treat that is just, like, listen, I plead the fifth on all of this. And because you're in an investigation now. Like, the court of public opinion is no longer of concern to you if you're Tom Izzo. You must handle this, like, through the proper legal channels, let them do their due diligence. If you're clean, that'll come out. If you're not clean, that'll probably come out. But it doesn't make any sense to be, you know, saying different things to different media outlets who pose the questions to you.
Well, here's the thing. I think these are two totally separate instances, though. But I feel like Tom Izzo and Mark D'Antoni are getting lumped in with this.
They are. But here, it's unfortunate for the program and for Michigan State that they came around digging like they did, and it exposes the whole university. But I would contend that, like, if you went digging to this degree around a lot of major athletic universities, you'd probably find, and maybe not to the degree, but you'd find some of that. You would.
Absolutely.
You know, and I hate to say that it's just the landscape and the pattern and the nature of college sports, but to a degree, like, I played at two universities, and there are things that happen, like, all the time, you know? And so I'm of the belief, and we've talked about it before, that I'm not going to – like, you're innocent until proven guilty. So I'm not calling for Izzo or D'Antoni or anybody like that to resign until we get to the bottom of that. I'm not going to go ahead and have reporters in there every press conference just grilling them and drilling them, trying to get them to say something that they would incriminate themselves or have them contradict themselves. I'll let them do their investigation, and then as a university, you know, we'll deal with it afterwards. But I don't like to try people in the court of public opinion.
Go ahead.
Isn't it that Tom Izzo and Mark D'Antoni are considering retirement right now?
No, they would never. If this wasn't a news story, they would not have been. Like, they're not
right,
at that point in their career.
But they're considering it because of this.
That has been reported by some people, but Mark D'Antoni
they're denying it.
Said that those claims were absolutely false.
I mean, that like, again, you can't do anything because just, like, now you look guilty. I'm talking.
Right.
So you have to deny the fact that you're considered retiring.
And even that question, when she said, "Do you have any regrets?" If he would have said yes,
well,
he's
done. He's
admitting guilt.
He's done.
So here's a question I have for you guys. So Outside the Lodge reported at least 16 Michigan State football players have been named in accusations of rape or violence against women since D'Antonio took over in 2007. So that's roughly a 10-year period, right? 10 or 11-year period. So that's about 1.5 players on 100-player roster a year. In the bigger scope of that, because I think athletes always get people assume the worst. They say, oh, they're a bunch of thugs.
Sure.
They're a bunch of guys who get away with stuff. I think if you put those numbers and you compare them to Michigan State's student body, that they're probably less than the normal student body.
Right.
Right, but
that doesn't make it right.
Right. It still doesn't.
Here's the problem I think that every college athletic program has. We should not let coaches handle discipline.
No.
Yes.
Especially with issues like this, because it's similar to parenting. Some parents are stricter than others. Some will let their kids get away with certain things and others won't. You're too attached to the player. You might know somebody on a personal level because he's your player, and you will defend him more or try to help him in situations when you can't see the problem. You can't see it in front of your face.
I guess, yeah. No, you're 100% right. I share a story that happened with me, and it begs the question, like, when you are a coach that has to levy discipline in a situation like this, and these are purely allegations, like, what's the right thing to do? Because I'll tell a story. I was at Boston University as a freshman, and three of my upperclassmen, they got involved with a girl one night. The next morning, she said that she was raped, and, you know, they were immediately expelled from school. She said she was raped. They kicked them out. You know, a year later, charges all dropped. Like, come to find out, like, she wasn't. She had told some of her girlfriends she was just embarrassed about what happened. You know, she had a boyfriend, and she didn't feel great about it. And so I know that not every situation is like that. But my point is, like, when it's just an allegation and there's no substantiated evidence, like, what is the right thing to do? I'm not saying what it is. I'm asking. Like, if you came to me as a coach, like, and my background is I have that story. Like, I know that story. And you know, there's no hard evidence yet. This hasn't been tried in a court yet. Am I supposed to take a kid's scholarship and sit him down right away? Like, and a year later, that could be the case. Or do I err on the side of, like, yeah, I got to take care of the victim in this? I don't have the right answer. So it's hard for a coach in a situation like that.
It's really tough. And it's a real world problem that people are dealing with across the country in every walk of life. And it's just something we need to do better at as a society. We need to make sure we're listening. But I think we need to make sure we're listening to everybody.
Yep.
Fair enough, Hannah?
Yeah.
You agree?
No, and I think people just need to be taking a closer look and, like, really evaluating every single case. I mean, obviously you talk about things that were falsely accused, and that reminds me of, like, the Duke lacrosse scandal, right? Like, that was huge. And I'm not saying that that has anything to do with this exact case, but I just think that it means when something like that happens, and what is it, 16 At least 16 Michigan State football players have been named in accusations of rape or violence against women since D'Antonio took over in 2007. I mean, that's huge.
That's big.
And it's still, like, right, it's not huge when you compare it to the entire body of students, but it shouldn't matter. Every single case since 2007 should already be done. Like, that should be, it should be taken care of already. Everything should have a microscope on it when it comes to these athletes.
No foot dragging on cases like that, right? Get right to it, like, swiftly figure out what happened. I agree.
Sure. And so we'll have to watch this play out. Every day, it's crazy. I mean, how fast things happen. We'll have to watch. Keep an eye on what happens to Tom Izzo.
I would imagine somebody's losing jobs.
I think so too. And from the gymnastics side, people already have, and I think no one has a problem.
No, I mean,
school president.
I would imagine Izzo or D'Antonio wind up losing their job over this.
Right. Yeah. It would not surprise me one bit. Look. All right. Let's move on, because it's a tough subject to top, but we want to make sure we tackled it and try to do it justice, because it is important to get done. So the Super Bowl's around.
Yep.
So we're going out there. I'm headed out there in Minnesota.
There's no I in team. You know this, right? Like, it's like, I'm going out there.
Well, I would love to bring the show. You guys, come on. Let's go.
I want to go. But
one of the things that players have to deal with is distractions. You played in an NBA Finals.
Yeah.
It's such a different dynamic, though, because it's a best-of-seven series. This is a one-game, winner-takes-all scenario. It is unique because you have a two-week lead-up to it where you're getting grilled about those all the times. But did you, when you were playing in the NBA Finals, like, was distractions an issue at all?
Yes.
It was.
Well, it didn't really matter for me because I was, like, just in the NBA for, like, a month and a half, and I was – yeah, it was a whirlwind, so I was happy to be there. You know, I was enjoying every moment I had. Distractions, when you're in a city for 3-4 days in a row, just not being at home in your own, like, routine becomes a distraction. You know, like, mm-hmm. It's a hard thing to do to stay sane. And I know it sounds like, hey, dude, just, you know, stay in that hotel room for 3 days and, you know, get your room service and watch TV and keep your, like, that's easier said than done, man.
Right.
City being LA.
It's a really, right. You start to get cabin fever. You look out, the weather's beautiful out there. It's Rodeo Drive. Like, they're great restaurants and stuff. So it is a hard thing to do. But the good ones, the really good ones, like, they figure out how to stay focused. Like, you figure out how to have some restraint, right? So, yeah, you go out, you have dinner, you can have a drink or two, right? But you're not out all night. You know, you're not burning the candle on both ends to where you can't get up and prepare the next day and go through the process of getting yourself and your team together to play the game. So, you know, it's all about self-control in terms of, like, not overdoing it. Like, everyone has to go out and be a human being. Don't overdo it. Don't kill it. Leading up the day before, stay in the room.
I feel like outside of distractions, though, it's also – I mean, the season is so long.
Right.
Like, aren't these guys exhausted? Like,
yeah.
I feel like they would be, like, frustrated, exhausted. Like, it's – a distraction is different at that point because it's just, like, you have to fake this energy
Super Bowl. You have – the energy – I mean, you should have a ton of energy just because, like, this is the – because,
like, you're hyped.
You're also,
like, your body's dumb,
but, yeah,
right?
Your body is wasted mentally.
But you get that extra week of rest, which is huge.
That's
for the players because they're used to going 1 week at a time.
So football, how you guys get there, what, two days before usually?
Not even. You get there the day before.
See,
this is weird.
You're there a week now.
Yeah.
See, that changes the dynamic.
They're getting in yesterday or today, and they're doing things that they normally never do. Like, they have the media night tonight, the big intro, and it's 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock at night. Like, it's late.
Those were the biggest thing. Those were the biggest differences. My day-to-day when I played in the NBA Finals, like, whether I went to dinner or went out and had a drink or was up till 12 o'clock, all that remained pretty much consistent. The amount of obligatory media and stuff like that was the stuff that was draining and exhausting because you're just not used to being on call all the time for 1,000 media outlets. You know?
Right.
Real talk.
Well, no, it is. It is a pain. It is energy consuming and not only that, but you're on the road. So normally if Tom Brady is, you know, in Boston, he's living in his pad with Giselle. On a Tuesday or Wednesday night, he goes home from work, from practice, and he can have dinner at his house.
Yeah.
Here, they're having to plan dinners. Where can we go? Or maybe we don't have to deal with autograph seekers. Like, they're having to approach this in a totally different mindset. But I'm, like, to Hannah's point, there's an exhaustion, But then at the same time, there's this energy that kind of you're infused with because it's exciting. Mm-hmm. Like there's people there at practice. There's so much more media there. But it's a balance because you don't want to exhaust yourself and make sure that you're ready. You want to have to save something for the game, which I think is that – I think that is a huge advantage for the Patriots, having been there so many times last year, knowing those routines. If you're the new team – I think that's Doug Peterson's biggest challenge is how do we keep this as, quote, normal as possible in an environment that's totally not normal to what you're used to?
Are you, like, see, that's, I always have that, like, debate with myself about, you know, is it better to keep it normal or is it better to them to let them know the gravity of the situation? So that they can, like, I don't know because I've been able to get myself right to the maximum, like, optimum level of hypeness.
Yeah.
I've also gone way overboard with that. And I've come out too flat. So I don't know, you know, especially when you're dealing with first timers there, like what do you do with them?
And not only that, but think about on a 53-man roster, half of them might want to sell that message of this is the biggest moment, you have to prepare extra.
Yeah.
Others you might have to tone down. Like that's the biggest challenge, I think, for them. All right, let's get to our guest, Will Brinson. We mentioned him off the top of the show. He is a senior writer with CBS Sports. All right, welcome Will Brinson to the podcast. He's a CBS Sports senior NFL writer. He's one of the hosts for our CBS Digital Pick 6 podcast. Make sure you download and subscribe, especially Super Bowl week. He's headed out to Minnesota later in the week. Follow him at Will Brinson. I love him because he's a fellow ACC guy. You guys didn't know that's why we're having him on.
You just found out.
He's repping his NC State helmet with us here on our Skype. We can see him. You guys can't. We'll get a picture up on our at Canell and Bell. Will, what's going on, man? How are you doing?
What's going on, guys? Thanks for having me. I got my dog here. My child is eating pancakes and watching television at 7:30 in the morning as we record this. What could possibly go wrong while I'm not paying attention in podcasting?
nothing whatsoever. So now, last week we did a segment here with our CBS Sports when we were doing a segment together about the AFC Championship game. You made a prediction, and I actually loved it. And I think I told you this when we were doing the segment. You picked the Jags to beat the Patriots, correct?
I did, incorrectly, but yes.
Right. I did too, Will. It's okay.
No, but I have a question for you because you're an NC State fan. You went there, so you root for your team. Do you root more for NC State when they're playing Duke or North Carolina, or do you root harder when you make a pick like the Jaguars against the Patriots?
Okay, so are you asking do I root more for NC State against Carolina or NC State against Duke? Is that the question?
No, or like one of their rivals or like the pick. Because I find myself, I root almost harder when I make a pick than I do for Florida State.
Yeah. I would say that I root harder when I make a pick. Well, I don't know. It depends. So, I mean, this is really convoluted, but I'll give it to you anyway. So I actually grew up a Duke fan because we had tickets to Duke. So I grew up like rooting for my one of my dad's good friends had tickets to Duke. So I went to a bunch of games at Cameron in like 91 and 92, a little spoiled there. I feel like fate resigned me to being an NC State fan. So I would never win anything again after that. So I would say that I root very aggressively when NC State plays Carolina as a result of those two things combining together. But when I make a pick, especially like a public pick where I'm picking the Jaguars to upset the Patriots, and I'll get credit for it. I think I was the only person who picked the Eagles to beat the Vikings. So I was rooting hard for the Eagles because therefore I look smart. I would much rather look smart than have my own fanhood satiated. If that
Me
makes
too.
Sense.
I'm in the same boat. Like I root for being right. Like that's what I want to be.
I'm
right.
So opposite.
All right. So look, as it pertains to gambling with the game, like what do you make of the line and its movement so far?
Well, I don't like that at all because I am staunchly in the corner of the Eagles picking the – I'm in the real business of picking against the Patriots this offseason.
It's not working.
It's really smart. No, I think I like the Eagles a lot in this game. And as our friend and colleague Nick Costas would say, I'm invested. I think that when you look at what the Eagles have, the one red flag that's throwing me off is the results of Jim Schwartz defenses against the Patriots and Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. It hadn't been great. But I also think that in order to beat the Patriots, you have to physically overwhelm them at the line of scrimmage, particularly on defense with the pass rush to get after Tom. I mean, it sounds – I know it's cliche and everybody says it, but it's just true. Like the only way to beat Tom Brady is to rush him with a minimal amount of pass rushers. And I think that the Eagles remind me a little bit of the 2011 Giants in the sense that they have this wave of pass rushers, this depth at defensive end, this depth at defensive tackle that they can send after Tom Brady. You know, they have enough talent in the secondary to hold up in case those guys don't get there most of the time. And they also have the ability to play with a lead. So if they can get Tom Brady on the ground, if they can pass rush him, if they can generate some points, then they can feed the ball to Jay Ajayi and LeGarrette Blount. And I like the fact that Doug Peterson has been an aggressive play caller and isn't afraid to push the ball down the field. I think that plays well if you can get a lead, or even if you're trailing a little bit. Like, they're not going to find themselves in any sort of new territory, regardless of what happens early.
I think you're spot on, especially with Doug Peterson being aggressive with Nick Foles. I think their best chance to win is to have that aggressive mindset to say, you know what, we're here, we are with the underdog, and let Nick Foles, and that sounds crazy, but almost try to get into a shootout where you're trying to score a lot of points and hope that you can get that lead and kind of contain it there. We were just talking about the fact that the experience factor, like the Patriots have been there so many times. They were just there last year. The Eagles, new to this situation. There is some stuff about Minnesota fans that they're trying to seek revenge against
yes.
the Eagles. Like, do you think that could be a real factor in this game? Like, that they're out there trying to distract them, going to their hotel, calling their hotel line.
They said they were going to send Uber drivers to like the wrong locations, which yeah. I thought was so weird.
For the fans. Do you think we'll see that play out? Do you think Minnesota fans? I always pictured Minnesota people as the nicest people in America.
Yeah,
it's really weird. Like, I assumed that they would just show up with cheese curds and other, what else, like ice poles or ice fishing poles or something yeah. like that. And like, hey, how's it going? I don't even know what a Minnesota person sounds like, but that's what's in my head. This is like the Super Bowl. I'm glad I'm fine. I'm not out there until later in the week because it's. Yes. I think the high while I'm there is going to be 18. So sweet. But I'm a little upset because I think that this is like the kitschiest Super Bowl of all time. You know, Radio Row is taking place on
the Mall of America's. Yeah. Yes.
The mall. It's a mall. Why are we doing it in a mall? But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if these Minnesota people. I think these Minnesota people are like. Okay, so if this were flipped, right, and the Super Bowl's in Philadelphia and the Eagles fans had just missed out, Eagles fans would be like, we're going to mug these Vikings fans and murder them in the street. And, like, the Vikings fans, their move is, like, their little fake line, they're like, we're gonna take them to a wrong place in an Uber. like, that's the most evil thing that you can conjure in your mind?
Yeah, there were social media groups about how they said they were requesting people to throw specifically like beer cans and folding chairs.
But they need they're desperately looking for the worst of the worst people in Minnesota to throw those beer cans because they inherently can't do it. Like, it's not like you could just go into walk out into the street and find somebody who would happily throw a beer can in Philly, right? Yeah, right. you need to seek out, like, they're putting Craigslist ads out looking for these people who are evil in Minnesota because they just don't exist as much. And so I don't think you'll see that. And I think you'll actually see a very friendly Minnesota people during this Super Bowl. I will say though that sports fandom, you know, brings out the most vengeful, of fans, certainly. I mean, if Minnesota fans can get fired up about this, then what else? What can't they get fired up about?
So media day has always been a thing for the Super Bowl, right? I mean, you've seen the crazy questions, the lady in the wedding gown proposing to players. Then they switched up the format a few years ago, and they go to this opening night, which is tonight. It'll be later tonight. Patriots Eagles, 8 and 10 o'clock. Are you a fan of this?
No, I'm not going this year. I don't think I went last year either. I don't like it. It's
Did you like Media Day, or are you just not a fan of the whole spectacle?
No, no. I don't want to sound like some jaded. I don't want to sound like Pete Prisco getting bored in my old age or something. I found that it hit some sort of point of saturation. Maybe 3 or 4 years ago, it just felt like all of the questions, all of the goofy questions, everybody was trying to find this goofy angle too aggressively. And we had hit like it's like it's fun for the first 3 or 4 years, and then eventually it's just sort of a zoo. I like it early in the morning because everybody's tamper down a little bit of the enthusiasm, and you can actually go around and chat with some players. I like media day, but I don't like media night because it doesn't need to be televised. Get off my lawn, guy. But it's just like there doesn't need to be a band blaring. You don't need to do introductions for all the players. They're changing it into opening night, and I think it loses a little bit of its bizarreness because it's opened up as this evening spectacle.
Well, anti spectacle in terms of media, Bill Belichick. Like, what's your take on him? I feel like you either love him, you hate him. He's either so bad that he's good, or you just hate his shtick. So where do you land on that spectrum?
I'm not a Patriots fan or anything, but I love and appreciate Bill Belichick and take no greater pleasure in my job than watching him be a total actually I can't say that word that I was going to say because he got bleeped in my other podcast a total jerk to in media situations. I get that he probably should be nicer and he could be better about it as part of his job, but it just cracks me up. Like the best press conference I think I've ever seen was that Deflategate one where he's quoting Mona Lisa Vita from My Cousin Vinny, and he's just up there, he's breaking down like the hydrogen atoms of certain things and going crazy. That to me was peak Belichick, and I think we get it on a regular basis more and more as he tries to keep people away from meddling in his business. It's also fun when he gets in the Super Bowl because, especially a Super Bowl where there's no controversy like the Deflategate controversy, because he'll let his guard down a little bit and he'll start, and you can't tell if he's tricking you or not, because he starts going to these like 10-minute segments and rants about the history of football. And you're like, oh, Bill Belichick, he's really reflecting on his legacy and where it means. And all of a sudden you realize that he's just eating up the time. he's just wasting air. He's just making sure you don't get any more questions.
He's filibustering. That's what he's doing. Like, he's filibustering. He's just trying to waste the time so he doesn't have to answer as many questions. All right, let's have some fun. We do our superlatives here on the podcast. So we're going to have some fun with some little props that our boy Debo put together for us. What is more concerning in this game for the Patriots? Is it Tom Brady's hand or Rob Gronkowski's concussion protocol?
Gronk's protocol. He'll be cleared by Friday, I think. He's not going to be cleared by Monday night.
Well, that's because they don't want him to go to the opening night media days.
Right.
Don't you think?
Can you really tell if Gronk has a concussion?
No.
Right. I mean,
see if Gronk, he's a Tide Pod. Yeah.
Hey, Gronk, what's your favorite number? 69. Or is he concussed? I don't know. Is he concussed? How many fingers am I holding? I mean, I don't know. I probably shouldn't do concussions.
That's
the bigger deal. That's if they don't have Gronk and they don't have Edelman. I really like the Eagles, but they're going to have Gronk. He's going to play in the Super Bowl two weeks to get cleared concussion protocol. I just bet he's not cleared until the end of the week because it's out of the Patriots' hands technically. I just have a sneaking suspicion he won't be cleared until the end of the week.
Well, I have to ask you, when I walked into the office today, Danny was like, did you watch Tom Brady's
– Tom versus Time.
Tom versus Time, whatever it's called. I refuse to watch it. Did you watch it at all, Will?
Yeah, I did, and nothing makes me more angry than the opening segment where Tom's walking through his $40 million house past his beautiful kids and his somewhat attractive wife out the door to his really, really expensive car that probably costs more than my house and saying, I give up a lot for football. Like, yeah, you sure do, Tom.
Oh, I love that you just hated that. I get that
being a professional athlete is very difficult, and Tom sacrifices all that he has to be the greatest of all time. It looks like he's doing okay to me.
All right. Which Prince song is Justin Timberlake more likely to cover during the halftime show?
I actually wrote a story about this. Let's Go Crazy, I think, is the answer, because Purple Rain, you can't – I think that it has to be sort of a medley situation, right? You have to build it in as part of sort of this, like, hey, this is a tribute, but without getting too deep into it. And I think if you did Purple Rain, you would have to do the entirety of Purple Rain.
That's true.
Although you could mix part of it into one slower song, but then that means you have to slow down like 6 minutes of the halftime show. So to me, what happens is this is just my prediction. Lights go dark. There's purple glow sticks under everybody's seat. Everybody holds them up. Bathe the whole thing in purple. You bust out Let's Go Crazy for like 90 seconds, and then you dive into Timberlake songs, and you get the credit of covering Prince without having to really cover him and have people break down whether you did it justice, and without having to slow down the halftime show. I will say, though, that I learned in my research for that article that there's actually a Timberlake-Prince beef that's going on. It went on back in the day over, I don't remember this happening. It was like in the Grammys or some sort of something like that. And they were beefing at an award show a little bit. And it later came out during records, but Timberlake is holding a listening party for his new album, Man in the Woods, at Paisley Park this week. So you have to think there's something going on here.
Did you get an invite to that listening party?
I did not. That would be, that would be the coolest thing. Ever,
you get one, hit me up because I'm gonna be out there too. I'm gonna try to work my way into that one. All right, what is more likely, the Tecmo Bowl prediction that Nick Foles will have two picks, but the Eagles still win, or Mike Trout's prediction that Tom Brady throws a late pick to seal the game for the Eagles?
I would say the Tecmo Bowl is more. I like Mike Trout, one of my favorite baseball players, but Tecmo Bowl. A better game than Mike Trout as a baseball player in the pantheon of video games. I'll give the edge to Tecmo Bowl, and I think the Tecmo Bowl thing is more likely because if Nick Foles throws two picks, to me the Eagles can overcome that. If Tom Brady throws a late pick, the Patriots are probably toast. If Tom Brady gets the ball within one score late, the Patriots will win. That's how the league operates, and it's phenomenal to think about how you. And watching it last year unfold, you knew, same with the AFC Championship game, when he got the ball, you knew, everyone knew it was over. And it's wild for that to be a thing in professional football.
And if you watch Tom versus Time, you would know that's the expectation. They come to believe that that's what's going to happen.
Not watching.
All right. Thanks, Will. Thanks for joining us. Make sure you check him out at Will Brinson. I'm going to hit you up for those. We're going to try to get into that private party.
Let's just party. We'll put on disguises and we'll sneak in.
All right, man. Sounds good, man. Have a good one.
All right, guys.
All right, let's get to it. Here's what's happening with Hannah. What you got, Hannah?
All right, guys. The NFC blew a 20-3 lead. The AFC 24-23 winners in Sunday's Pro Bowl. The Titans' Delanie Walker caught a touchdown with 91 seconds remaining, while the Broncos' Von Miller strip-sacked Jared Goff to end the game. Now, Walker and Miller named co-MVPs after the game. Multiple players commented saying the product was better and guys played harder this year. UCF was there rocking their natty champ shirts. Danny, not in attendance.
No, I wanted to be like the head grand marshal of that one. So the game I have not watched in a couple years. And so I flipped over yesterday to watch a play or two. I didn't realize they don't tackle. Like, it's not even, they don't even bring them to the ground half the time.
It's touch. The officials, it's two hand touch.
What I didn't realize is that is supposedly some hot take. I get into it with Trey Wingo on Twitter. He's saying, you know, it's a hot take. I thought most people realized the game was crappy.
Right.
And I didn't know. Like, I thought the hot take was him saying it's a good product. I don't know. I think it's not a good game to watch. But 7.9 million people are still tuning in to watch the Pro Bowl.
The under hit again.
Yes, the under did hit again. So Rajah won that
one. Yeah.
All right, Rajah, I got one for you. The NHL All-Star game happened.
That's word? It. When did that happen?
It was in Tampa. Tampa Bay. This weekend?
Yeah.
You know anything about that?
How did Martin Brodeur do?
Lots of saves. Yeah.
Fantastic.
All right,
that. I
moving
like it.
On.
So was Gasparilla's over in
oh,
Tampa,
yeah, Gasparilla.
Too. As Debo was over there getting after it. Yeah,
what?
He's hurting a little bit this morning.
Oh, my gosh. I would never go. Okay. Roger Federer continues to defy all we know about aging, winning his record-tying 6th Australian Open title on Sunday and 20th Grand Slam of his career at 36 years old. Now, on the women's side, Caroline Wozniacki captured her first Grand Slam single title with a win down under.
It's all about Federer. I mean, 20 Grand Slam titles, it's pretty insane what he's been able to accomplish. And I feel like he's probably the most most respected, well-liked athlete across anyone. Because when we talk about Brady, we have haters. When you talk about Tiger Woods, people say, hey, he's done. Federer, there's like just a unanimous,
he's
the
GOAT, and everybody loves him.
He's a bad dude.
I wish he got more credit. Like, I wish he was more watched, more talked about.
Because
he's
not very
so
polarizing.
Good.
He's just professional, and like everybody just admires him.
Yeah. All right, 72, 71, 70, 72. That's a look at Tiger Woods' return to the PGA Tour after a year-long absence. Tiger -3 for the tournament and tied for 23rd at Torrey Pines, probably most importantly without pain. He did have to endure a fan yelling during the backswing of one of his putts. It wasn't me, guys, I swear. Farmers Open finishing up today, actually.
I think he's back.
Really?
I know the driver wasn't
That's
under control. Like he
oh,
missed.
He was spraying that
he
thing
was spraying
all
it.
Over.
But I liked that he was grind. Like, I like where his mental makeup was, that he was able to grind despite that. Short game looked really good, though. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of that little stuff around, you know, short-sighted a lot. Like, that looked really good. Putting, there were some struggles. But like mechanically, I wasn't really too worried. I want to see where he's at mentally, and I kind of liked what I saw. I think he can figure it out over the next couple months.
He finished, what, 24th?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Like, to see him
tied
back
for 23rd.
Yeah, 23rd.
To see him where he has a chance and he's finishing tournaments, he's making cuts. I am with you. I think he's back to contending.
Correct.
Now, to say he's back, will he win another major? I'm not going to go that far.
Yeah, I don't know that
he – But it's great that he's back.
He's
where
back.
He is.
If he can just be in the mix, if he can be making cuts, if he can be, you know, top tens and in the hunt, like, for golf, like, that's just going to be a huge win.
It's more fun.
Yeah.
All right, Sixers Thunder developing into an East-West rivalry because of a brewing rivalry between Joel Embiid and Russell Westbrook. So JoJo got the poster dunk on Russ. Westbrook got the win and did a lot of staring. OKC sweeps the season series with a 122-112 victory.
The dunk was filthy. That was nasty. But see, here's one of the things I love about Westbrook. Again, like, he kind of went up there to take the charge.
Yeah,
like,
he don't care.
Like, a lot of dudes would bow out. They'd say, go ahead. And
right.
He's, like, staying in there. That's why I like Westbrook.
Yeah, he's a savage. We talked about that last episode. His mindset is just animal. Like, he's animal cub all the way. It'll be really interesting to see what happens with them without Roberson. Like, they've been so attached to him. He's great defensively. But if they can plug in somebody else and they can hit a stride with a better shooter out there, creates that much more space, I'm really intrigued to see what happens. But it sucks for Roberson. That was an ugly injury.
Does that rivalry continue All-Star Weekend, Westbrook and Bede?
Oh, are they? They're on opposite teams? Oh, yeah, that's a beef. Like, they're,
it's
like,
a serious beef.
And Bede is one of those dudes that, like, he plays, but he plays too much.
Yeah.
So it becomes, like, a beef at some point with him. Like, it's play, play. And I'm like, yo, dude, stop. And then you don't stop. And now we're really beefing, you know?
All right, last but not least, the Cavs won, and Isaiah Thomas played well. The thing is, he didn't play in the fourth quarter. He did play the entire third, notching 10 of his 14 points in the frame, in addition to 7 assists on the night. Cleveland coach Ty Lue plans to implement new rotation with plans to stagger Thomas's and LeBron's minutes to allow them to both lead the offense. The Cavs outscored the Pistons 31-17 in the fourth en route to a 121-104 victory.
That is a spur of the moment right now band-aid that is not going to work. Isaiah Thomas, if you saw him in the press conference after the game, not excited about not playing in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. He doesn't see himself as a problem defensively, although clearly the numbers over his career suggest otherwise. He is very bad defensively. The Cavs are much worse defensively when he's on the court. There's going to be a problem in Cleveland.
I'm about to go out and say that what we saw Saturday night is the finals preview. With the Warriors play the Celtics. To throw in the towel on the Cavs. I'm not there yet. Like, I got to see a little bit more. It's still early. I feel like there's always drama around the Cavs around this time of year. Will they get it figured out? I need to see more play out. But you mentioned Isaiah. How about his comments when he was talking about the defensive stats before he got there? Like, he's like, everybody wants to – he's already feeling defensive about it. He's saying, hey, everybody's blaming me for these issues, but we were awful before I got here. Like, it is a very real issue with this team. The chemistry, some of – like, things that matter, things that are important.
It's
like,
ugly.
It is ugly right now with the Cavs for sure when you think about it. All right, so Debo – we had the Grammys last night. You made up something for us. We have our NBA Grammys.
Yeah, I think it's one of our things on this podcast. Anytime an athlete raps, including Danny Cannell, we're going to play it. We're going to react to it. So why not? The NBA known for, you know, a lot of players want to be rappers. Rappers want to be ball players. We're going to do the
singing?
NBA Grammys. Singing not on this list. I know you're thinking of Victor Oladipo.
I am. Victor Oladipo's
another
my
time.
Boy.
Another time for Unfollow.
Y'all got to listen
so
to Unfollow.
So should I go like a whole opening monologue like they do?
Yeah.
Should I talk about guys, stop being weird, politicians?
Yeah.
Never mind. On to the first ever NBA Grammys in honor of Lakers rookie Lonzo Ball and his soon-to-be rap concert debut in hip-hop hotbed Lithuania. We begin with the Best Active NBA Rappers category with none other than the big baller himself with Super Saiyan. Hey, diamonds on my neck and wrist, they get up. Hey, I had no choice, you know I had to get up. Sit back, turn the music up. Straight crack, I spit that, but not homie, I ain't talking drugs. I ain't on the corner, I ain't selling rock, banging with the thugs. I be on the court, yeah, I push the rock, cause ballin' what I love. Pay attention, listen closely, I won't say it twice. Married to the game, I tell you.
I don't know if I wanted that to end.
I know, right?
I like that.
I like that beat, though.
Two thoughts came to my mind. One is I used to have a big sub in the back of my car, like in college, and yeah, I could hear the windows rattling. Yeah. Like with that song, it would have been coming through. The other thing I kind of like about it is that it seemed from that bar right there, there's like some pretty positive message.
Yeah.
Like I'm not slinging, like,
yeah,
and
yeah,
I
yeah.
want something I can listen to with my daughters and like my, you know, the younger generation, like yeah. a positive message.
Not bad at all, sir. All right,
so that was Lonzo Ball. Next up, a guy I believe who you have heard spit in person, Raja. We got Iman Shumpert with the Cavs anthem.
Our fan base, all the noise our fans make. This game can make a man great, from the game winners to the handshakes. Setbacks, ankles, lives, oh my, quicken, loans, crowd, oh my.
Yeah, Shump is talented.
I
mean,
still
he,
like
he is. I think he's a little more artsy than like than Lonzo and some of those dudes. Like, mm-hmm. if you know him, he's a little. It's not just straight rap. Like, he's got an artsy vibe to him. His freestyle that night at wherever we were, that Detroit City Music School or whatever, was incredible. Like, it was really cool.
He sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
He does sound good.
So that's Lonzo Ball and Iman Shumpert. Not an all-star in the NBA, but he's in the starting lineup for all-star NBA rappers. It's Lou Willville, Lou Williams, with his take on a personal friend. Hashtag free McMills. I'm a boss.
I came to Philly, not asking for no favors. Accepting handouts, no sugars from my neighbors. Remember me bench riding?
I can't listen to it with my daughters now. I can't listen to it.
Is that
the
criteria?
For me, it is.
I did not like that. I don't even care what they're talking about. Like, that doesn't bother me. He was like screaming.
He was yelling.
Well, that's like a very distinct style.
Yeah, that's like the Eminem
thing. You making fun of Meek Mill?
I just like can't relate.
Philly legend?
I can't relate to that. Like, it's not relatable. I don't like it.
All right, the last one in the active NBA rappers category. This is a dude that takes snub seriously, so watch out if you don't pick him. Damian Lillard. A.K.A. Dame Dala, with two real albums out with features like Lil Wayne and Future. Perfectly titled song here called They Sleep.
It's always room for a real one because you can't finesse the grind. The chatter gets ignored because they hating from behind. It's getting clear. They bothered that I'm here. The top in my side mirror closer than it appears. Yeah, and my peers, they know that I don't fit the stereotype. If I don't practice what I preach, then you can bury me in white.
I'm a fan of that.
And the Grammy goes to
Dame Dala. Yeah,
Dame is official, man. That's like,
yeah.
He has two albums out. Do we like that? They sold. Like, does he actually like? Does he perform? Does he go on tour?
I listen to my car every morning.
You do.
every morning.
Really?
Whoa.
Fire.
It's crazy. Like, I say, good for these dudes. Consensus. Who were able to explore.
Consensus.
Yeah, yeah. I would give it to Dame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like the other guys are. Like, Lonzo might be the closest to being,
Lonzo's,
like, a basketball player, but could have been – like, I think he could be – like, Dame could have been either way. He could have either hooped or, like, pursued
– He's doing both pretty well.
Right. Like, I think
– Do you think NBA coaches like this? Like, if you're – if Dame's your player, he's your guy, he's your fisher, does this bother coaches?
No. No, I mean, unless you're, like – unless you're doing concerts and it's affecting what we're trying to do as a team.
Right.
But there's so much free time. If it's not interfering with your day job or your night job.
I feel
job,
like NFL coaches would hate this.
Would
but,
they?
But like, and wrongly so.
That's why we're more
like,
progressive.
They want one foot. Like, totally. I totally agree.
Much better
sport. I wonder if anybody would come big.
Yeah. Coaches can't hate this because they're retired guys. So we move on to the best retired NBA rappers category. And must be an L.A. thing with former Lakers dominating this list. So much like NFL Jams.
Yeah.
Featuring MC, DK, Danny Cannell.
Well,
the NBA released a similar athletes rapping album called Basketball's Best Kept Secret in 1994. A couple of those were actually the good kind of secret. Like Brian Shaw.
A lot of people be liking to say that they down with me, but ain't have one of them folks lost their whole damn family. Yeah, when you lose, I pay my dues, but somebody's always trying to stop you just to get the rep that they got you.
Yeah. I love how they have this very distinct style. It's very West Coast.
Yeah, he's 90s. Bay Area, I believe,
yeah,
right? He's
totally.
Oakland.
You want some more G-Funk?
He's Oakland. Yeah.
We got
Seth
Sabalos with some more G-Funk.
Now I told you once before, it's the mad punk kicking rub stuff, quick up, back and funk up. Yeah, give a...
Set was a DJ in Phoenix.
I feel like I want like a mixed album now. Like I want like a CD,
the off the bench mix.
Yes,
off the bench
mix
playlist.
I'll put that together.
Spotify.
And then the last one on this list, we got Shaw, we got Sabalos, we got Shaq Diesel himself. He didn't need that Best Kept Secret album because he has a discography that includes 4 studio albums, 2 compilation albums, 2 soundtracks, 1 unreleased album, and 9 singles. But this was a feature on the Fooshnickens.
Yeah.
What's up, Doc?
Now who's the first pick? Me road this morning.
Not Christian Leitner, not a lot of warning.
That's okay, not being braggadocious.
Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
No joke, now I slam it.
Jam it, and make sure it's broke. What's so, up,
I think,
Doc?
I think Raja wins the award.
Yes.
True story.
Best new artist, Raja.
True story. I used to have a ghetto blaster.
Yeah.
Put it outside, shoot hoops. That would be playing.
Push the kids
and shout. Absolutely. Yeah.
That's
opened
not even a question.
Door,
the diesel.
Yeah.
I mean, but he acted.
Yeah.
People sleep on the D's, right? Because he's this big, you know, silly dude, man. But he was like one of the best centers of all time. Rapper, actor, just good dude, man.
Yeah. No doubt.
So we got Damian Lillard a winner, Shaquille O'Neal a winner. This category, worst rappers. I'm not even going to intro him. I need you guys to guess the voice.
Oh, no.
Your love's a sword, slicing gently through my body, burn so sweet. Blood boils when you speak, makes me weak. But I refuse to weep, yet when I sleep, I feel tears trickling down my cheek.
Come on.
Kobe Bean Bryant.
Yep,
that's
and
your boy.
That's the whole list.
Oh.
Kobe Bean Bryant, man. The worst NBA rapper.
The worst NBA, but
right? That wasn't good.
That was not great.
It was awful.
But what he's doing now is pretty cool, right? Isn't he Oscar nominated?
Yeah,
Like
he's transitioned. He realizes his strengths and weaknesses.
He found his art elsewhere.
Yeah, like another super talented dude, but that was not great.
Back to back Lakers. We got Shaq and Kobe, best and worst. So this is the last one here. We finished with the category of most influential basketball related rap lyric from actual rappers.
Mm.
There's just two on the list, and it's old school versus new school. We got Ice Cube on Today Was a Good Day.
Yeah.
Last week, messed around and
got
a triple-double.
Double. Yeah.
Or Drake, New School, 0-100. Steph Curry with a Shot Boy. What's more influential rap lyric?
Steph Curry with the Shot, been cooking with the pop.
That's so hard.
Yeah.
That's so hard.
I'm going to say the most influential rap song of all time was Curtis Blow, Basketball.
Yeah.
I'm rapping Basketball.
Dope.
Like,
what?
That would take the.
What about Bow Wow Basketball?
What?
Oh, my God.
I'm joking. I'm joking.
All right.
Is there a specific line from that? Like, when he says, I watched the Knicks play basketball?
Yeah.
But nothing like.
He shouted out players, though.
Nothing like today, messed around, got a triple double.
Yeah, that was a dope lyric.
Specific one lyric.
Yeah.
Which one?
Catch me on the court and I'm trouble. Last week, messed around and got a triple double. That's where I'm going with. I'm going with that one. Yeah.
I'm going Drake.
Hannah goes new school.
Yeah. Yeah.
No surprise there.
Of course he does.
I feel like Drake shouts out like stuff like that all the time.
Yeah.
What was the lyric I used to love?
Thirsty. Drake is.
It wasn't that long ago. It said something about you wasn't with me when I was shooting in the gym or something like that. It was referencing. Anyway.
Who was it?
Somebody made the lyric. It was about like splitting up and. He said, you wasn't with me. He was talking to a female. He wasn't with me when I was shooting in the gym or something like that. It's a recent rap lyric. But I like the lyric because my wife used to shoot in the gym with me like when I was a rookie.
Oh,
I used to take her in there with me at night, and she shagged balls for me. So it was for me, it was a dope lyric.
Nice. All right. Well, well done.
First annual. First annual.
Well done with that. All right. Raja's got a bolt. He's got to get out of here.
Now we get in trouble.
Thanks for checking us out. This is Off the Bench. Make sure you subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Leave us that 5-star review. Leave us a question in there. We'll get them on Friday with our 5-star Q&A on Friday.
Rick Ross.
There we go.
Coming through.
Ricky Rose.
And follow us on Twitter @Canell and Bell. Thanks for checking us out. See ya.